That is a very good question. How long can I talk? How long of a
We have
monologue
all
can
the
I
time in
have
the
here?
world.
If we really start from the beginning, I mean, boats have been a passion of mine my whole life. I designed and built my first boat when I was 12 years old. So some help from my dad, but I designed and built the first boat from 12 years old. Then all my life I've been building boats for myself. I didn't turn it into a job until later on in my career.
How old are you now?
I'm 38.
Okay. So
I'm
you have quite a
38 right
track
now.
record.
Yeah, exactly. Now I've been building boats for some time. I got a master's degree in vehicle technology. So I should be in the car industry, should be designing electric cars.
Welcome to the 2.5 Conversations Connecting Innovators. My name is Klaus. I'm an innovation coach in Baden-Württemberg in the southwest of Germany. Innovators and creators from around the globe help each other by sharing highs and lows, their motivation and creative passions, as well as their favorite methods, tools, and ideas. The name of the podcast comes from the 2.5% innovators from Rogers' Diffusion of Innovation Theory. Find more details, all the episodes and transcripts at the2.5.net. Enjoy the show. In this episode of the 2.5 Innovator Podcast, I'm talking to Emil Finne. He's the CEO and founder of Elevene, a solar boat builder in Finland. Emil, how did I do pronouncing your company name?
I think you succeeded very well.
I tried
it
really
hard. It was one
hard.
Of the better ones. Yeah.
Okay, different languages, different cultures, different whatever. That is always, always, always tricky. I'm from Germany and you're in Finland, so that's it's a miracle that it works technically to have such a conversation, even if we got used to all this. But I'm always surprised that these things work. Hello to the podcast. I'm glad that you took the time to be on this conversation.
Thank you so much. And I'm really happy to be here. And thank you for inviting me. Looking forward to our discussions and see what we can come up with today.
So, Emil, you build boats in Finland. Duh. What's new here?
Yes, we build boats in Finland. Finland has a very long heritage of boat building. Goes all the way back to when Finland was a part of Sweden, the Swedish kingdom. And the area where I'm living in, Jakobstad, this area was decided to be the shipbuilding area of the Swedish kingdom. So the history goes back all to that time. And we still have a very strong boat building cluster here, from everything from small outboard runabouts up to 100 plus feet super yachts. So we got a lot of boat building experience here. But I would say what we do differently at Elevene is that our boats are 100% self-sustainable. They don't need any external energy. They produce all the energy they need themselves, and this energy is coming from the sun. That is the difference.
If you didn't say from the sun, I would have guessed that you're building sailboats.
Exactly. No, we would like to go against the wind as well, and it's easier to steer if you can just go in any direction you choose. So we decided to go with solar power instead.
Great. Solar power. That means that you build boats, right? There is an electric motor and some panels somewhere. Give us an I guess so, right? And then there's some
seats, exactly.
And whatever.
Yeah.
For what kind of use case do you build the boats right now, or the current boats?
Yeah. If we start from the beginning, you're absolutely right. With the basics of the technologies, the boat is covered with solar panels that charge a battery that runs the motor. that's the whole solution in its simplicity. The difficult part comes, or the hard part comes, when you start integrating this and actually optimizing it, because we know exactly how much energy we're getting from the sun. We get around 1,000 watts per square meter. That's what the sun is emitting all the time. Solar panels currently have an efficiency of around 23-24%, which means you're getting around 230-240 watts per square meter of solar panel. So this is a constant we have. We know the amount of energy we're getting. And it's not much, actually. It's quite a limited amount. So the difficult part and the challenging part and the interesting part is to optimize the boat so you get the maximum performance out of quite limited amount of energy. And what this means is just building energy efficient boats. And the electrical system is just one part of it. Actually, the complicated part and the part that matters the most is the boat itself, to build a very energy efficient hull that is hydrodynamically perfect and also very lightweight, so that you get a boat that actually works with this technology. And for the use cases, we have several use cases we're working with. Currently, hospitality is one of the main ones. So with that, I mean, we're working with a lot of hotels, beach resorts, etc. A lot of ecotourism, where they want to provide sustainable water cruises to their clients. This is a great use case. Also water taxis, and what we're right now getting into more and more, and which is turning out to be an absolutely fantastic use case, is commercial fishing. So both in water and coastal fishing, not anything like out in the open oceans, but coastal fishing and inland fishing. This is really a great use case.
I see that a lot. But first of all, what I understand is that you're looking into different industries. You're looking into different usages of these boats. And we need to come back to the hull design and stuff like that, right? I'm sort of jumping over that. sorry for that.
It's just the most interesting part, so don't worry about that.
It's just the invisible part that nobody's ever going to see, right? Only the person that is cleaning the hull in wintertime. Yeah. But what I understand is tourism, it's a very first choice thing to go into tourism, I think, with a solar boat. Solar electric boat, since there is so many rentals or, as you said, that are green tourism starting popping up, that it just makes sense. It's less pain on the operators, right? The batteries are always charged, that you never have to change the oil of the engine and stuff like that. And what's also quite common is that the operators have to get the people with the rental boats with a gas engine that ran out of gas, right? So it's just a pain for the operators also. Plus, it's loud, it's smelly, and so on, and it's just no fun to have an engine with gas. And what I like is that you're looking into additional industries, which seems at first glance so far distant from the tourism use case. But as you say, it's the same thing, right? You don't want to have smells. You don't want to have noise. You stay stationary a lot, possibly. You don't want to use a lot of energy. You don't want to produce CO2. You want to have low costs. That's something you have in other industries a lot also, this requirement.
No, exactly. And we're looking into, we're a very data-driven company, an engineering company that really believes in engineering and a fact-based company. So when we're looking into different use cases, we want to have some data available so we can do the calculations and build the business case according to that. And this is much easier in commercial operations, and it's also a lot easier explaining the benefits and the case when you have a correct data to work with. And if we're talking about, for example, commercial fishing, which seems to be kind of an odd industry maybe to walk into for a company like us, but for them, their main expense is actually fuel. It's the fuel cost that is their main expense. And we can get rid of that to 100%.
Yes.
So it's not only about giving them a better working environment. Of course, they get that as well. They get a better working environment because they get rid of vibrations, sound, fumes, fuel, all of that. But at the same time, they're saving a lot of money. And of course, it's the environmental benefits that they are not polluting waters. So it's like a win-win-win-win-win situation. There's no downside to it at all. And when we're talking about commercial fishing and other commercial operations, like I said, they have the data. They know how far they are going. They know how fast they're going. They know how often they go. So they can present to you exactly the data that they have and what kind of performance they need. And then it's really easy to offer that solution.
It's easy for you to plan that. It's easy for you to calculate that. And it's easy for them to understand that, because it starts to get a no-brainer if you work in daytime, basically, right? If you work nighttime, it might be a bit different. I understand. So how do you get into that new thing, right? You started with the tourist use case, and then you discovered that there's fishing as a possibility. Did you find that or have made that observation yourself? Did you talk to different people and ask them what their needs are? Did they come to you and ask you for a solution?
Actually, if we're going really back to the beginning, it started the other way around. Fishing was actually the first use case we were looking into, both commercial fishing and sport fishing.
Okay.
It might have something to do with that I'm a very eager fisherman myself, but it might have something to do with that. But no, so really, really from the beginning, some 5-6 years ago, when we started designing the first boats, our goal was to build fishing boats and fishing vessels because it just makes so much sense.
Yes.
But then we realized when it comes to fishing, there's a lot of legislation involved into this and a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of different policies that don't go hand to hand. So when we then mainly focused on Europe and the European market, we realized that there were a lot of contradictions within the policies and the legislations regarding commercial fishing within the EU. And what happened was, if we really summarize this into a really simplified package, is if a commercial fisherman wants to buy a new fishing vessel, they get 50% investment grant if they buy a traditional boat, which means it's powered by diesel or gasoline. If they want to buy a boat powered by electricity, they don't get an investment grant.
Oops.
Yeah. So that's kind of the whole business case failed there at that point when we realized that. And that's when we took the turn into leisure boats, hospitality, taxi boats, etc. But the fishing case was always in the back of my mind, and I didn't want to let go of that. So actually, in Western Africa, which is quite a good market for us, that's where we once again went back into fishing and to commercial fishing, started doing some fishing boats there. And from that, we took a step back into the EU and Europe, and have now been lobbying for changes in these policies and these legislations so we would get the change. And actually just, two, 3 weeks ago, I went out for a ride with the European Commissioner in charge of these matters. So it's taken a couple of years, but we're finally now at the level so we can have these discussions and we are seeing the change happening. So that's why we're taking the step back into commercial fishing.
Well, that's, I'm not surprised, but I like that we got into something that is so completely, so far away from boating, from boat building, from whatever, right? in this conversation. And it's probably normal with all these new technologies, new things, new whatever. There's always something lurking in the background or on the way that sort of prevents the new because it's just not the old.
Exactly.
Legislation, stuff like that. Taxation, possibly. Okay. Well done that you're on the way to progress this.
No, it's absolutely the things you want to focus on as an entrepreneur.
Yes, right. You would have the four more models on the market already, but you had to focus on politics and bureaucracy.
Exactly.
That I think I have written some years ago a short article about electric fishing boats in Africa, and I was quite surprised that it wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. So when you come around with the solar panels and the solar energy, which means that they are really independent, the boats are independent of a plug, that makes so much sense, I suppose, for African markets, not just African markets, but especially there where you can use it anywhere without any infrastructure, I suppose.
Exactly. That is exactly the benefits of it. You can use it anywhere. You have very stable sun. I mean, you're so close to the equator, so you have very stable sun. You know what you're getting. So it's really easy to build and design a solution that works perfect for that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Since I'm not a fisherman, I'm not really interested in fishing boats, right?
Okay. Ah, what a shame. What should we now talk about then?
I'm really interested in leisure boats.
Okay.
And I think you're getting to the perfect recipe for a boat to spend a nice day on the water.
Yes.
And because we don't need to forget that we need to have sun shades, some Bimini type of solution or whatever on every boat in now already and possibly even more in the future because of sunburn and all these other things. It's just more agreeable to be in the shade even on a boat. So your solar panels are providing that basically originally naturally. And then it just seems such a great choice to use one of your boats to be out on the water for some time. There's even a fridge.
Yes.
That's perfect. Bathing
water. Yes, absolutely. No, when we came to the decision that we would start building leisure boats, we did what we always do in Elvene. We started looking at data, looking at facts, like how do people actually use their boats? What are the use cases? How fast do they go? How far do they go? How much time do they spend on the boat, et cetera, et cetera. And the data we found wasn't very nice to look at from a boat builder's point of view, to be honest, because people don't go far, they don't go fast, and they don't use their boats very much. But so we looked at that data and started designing our boats from that. So that our boats would be able to, we followed the typical 80-20 rule, so that our boats could be used in the 80% of all the use cases. What we then figured out was that the boat needs to have a range of around 20 nautical miles per day, and the top speed has to be around 15 knots. Because when we looked at all the data that we could find, we realized this was now mainly Europe, European countries. But what people do when they use their leisure boats, they usually go out for a day trip. They only go a few nautical miles to a beach, to an island, to a restaurant, whatever. Spend some time there, go swimming, go fishing, go have dinner, whatever. And then they go back in the evening. Average speed, one of my favorite data sources was actually a Finnish company, a boat sharing or boat rental, boat sharing company from Finland. I think it was the world's largest boat sharing platform at some point. But they gathered this data from all their boats and shared it. So you could openly look at how people in different countries are using their boats. And this was great data to use in our development. And here, what they presented was, I remember the Nordic countries by heart. So I remember that the average driver went around 12 to 14 nautical miles per day. That was it. The average speed was around 7 to 8 knots. And that was it. And these were boats that could go hundreds of miles and with a top speed of 40 knots. But how people actually used them was that they went for about 14, 15 nautical miles max at a 7 to 8 knot speed. So that's where we came up when we designed the boats, the leisure boats. We said, you have to be able to drive 20 nautical miles every day. And if the average speed is 7, 8, let's double that. So we put 15 knots as the top speed. And from an engineering point of view, this was the perfect solution. And I still think it is the perfect solution. And we started selling these. But then we started getting feedback from customers that, why are we only going 15 knots? We want to go faster.
Right.
So if you see that, now you might know that our boats can now do 30 knots. So now we offer top speeds of 30 knots, still solar powered. And we have done more than 200 nautical miles without charging. So I think we're starting to be at a point now where people can't complain about the performance anymore. They have things to complain about.
People will always complain, right? And when I think of these giant center console boats with 5 Mercury V12 engines in the back with 1,500 horsepower or something like that, 2,000 horsepower, then you probably will never beat that.
No, we won't go there. We won't touch that.
It's a different world, right?
It's a different world.
And you don't want to pay for the gas. It's just, but probably they also don't go that fast for a long time because it's just loud and it hurts the wallet.
Yeah. And exactly what you're saying about the sound, I mean, this, I would say, is one of the main reasons and one of the things I appreciate the most myself after switching to, of course, I only drive solar electric boats myself anymore. And it's actually the sound that really makes the difference when you don't have to listen to that combustion engine,
yes,
but you're actually listening to, I mean, the water against the hull. You can hear the birds, you can hear nature. And you can also smell nature because you don't have the fumes in your nose all the time.
Yeah, it's a sailing like experience from that point of view,
yes.
Which whoever has done that before knows that it's something really special. You're so much closer to nature, to the water, to all the animals around, and yes, you are able to go anywhere, anytime, basically with the electric motor, right? That helps a lot. And exactly, it's less hassle. You can do that by yourself. You don't have a huge mass that prevents you from going underneath a bridge or whatever. So it's just a good solution, I think. The best sailboat without a sail experience.
Exactly. No, exactly like you said, it's much easier than using sailing. But I would also say it's much easier to use and much more user-friendly than a traditional boat with a combustion engine.
Yes.
Because the motor, well, of course, an electric motor has constant torque. So it's much easier to control when you don't have these like torque curves or there's power curves, but it's always constant. So the boat is just so much easier to maneuver and to handle compared to a traditional one.
Also, I'm also at Lake Constance, Bodensee, in the southwest of Germany. It's a big lake. It's one of the biggest lakes in Germany. And there's just not a lot of gas stations around the lake. Sometimes they are overcrowded because it's at special times. Everybody's using them. And sometimes you have to get there, which might take you half an hour or even longer. And getting the gas can be a hassle, right? And if you get that with an extra container from a normal gas station, that's also possible. But then you have that messy stuff in the back of your car, and it could explode, and it's exactly. whatever, right? It's just a hassle. And with such a solar boat solution, you don't have any of that.
No, exactly. That is, of course, where we're focusing a lot of benefits now, but that is really one of the main ones that you don't have to think about that. You don't have to think about where to refuel or how to refuel, or you don't have to carry any jerry cans of fuel to your boat. And yes. you don't have to worry about where to plug it in or anything. You just go.
Yes.
And talking about Lake Constance, I was actually there with a boat a couple of years ago. And we were probably the first electric boat to go to 3 countries without charging. But unfortunately, we didn't document it. So should have done that.
Let's do that again.
Yeah, we need to do that. Yeah.
You said that you look a lot into numbers. Engineering is important yes. for you. We were briefly talking about hull shapes, which are different for electric boats, or which are basically optimized, or every hull is optimized for something, right? Yes. It could be optimized for speed if you have lots of big engines. It could be optimized for efficiency also, and for certain speeds also. How did you get to your hull shape? Was there any support? Did you work with other boat builders or universities?
That is a very good question. How long can I talk? How long of a monologue
can I have? We have all the time in the world.
If we really start from the beginning, I mean, boats have been a passion of mine my whole life. I designed and built my first boat when I was 12 years old. So some help from my dad, but I designed and built the first boat from 12 years old. Then all my life, I've been building boats for myself. I didn't turn it into a job until later on in my career.
How old are you now?
I'm 38.
Okay. But you have quite a track record.
Yeah, exactly. Now I've been building boats for some time. I got a master degree in vehicle technology. So I should be in the car industry, should be designing electric cars. Don't like that industry. I went into the electric boating instead. And the hull shape, when you look at electric boats and when you look at the electric boat industry, the bottleneck everyone is mentioning, and this has been the same, this has been constant now for 10 years at least. The bottleneck everyone is mentioning and complaining about is charging infrastructure. But there is no charging infrastructure for electric boats. So my whole idea from the beginning was just remove the bottleneck. What is needed to be able to remove the bottleneck? Okay, we have to produce the energy ourselves. So how do we produce the energy ourselves? It's wind or solar, pretty much those two alternatives. Realized solar works better. Okay, now we got this far. So we know where the energy is coming from, and we know how much energy we're getting. Then we need to start to look at the hull shape, as you said. And we need to have some design limitations. Like, what are we going for? And like you said, all hulls are optimized for something. And immediately from the beginning, I knew I didn't want to design really slow displacement boats. Because if we're honest, that's a no-brainer. You can put whatever on a boat and you can drive that 5 knots. It doesn't matter. It's easy. I didn't want to go the easy route. So when I started thinking, okay, so we need to have a faster boat. Then there are options. You can, of course, jump into foiling if you want that. You can have a V-shaped planing hull, et cetera, et cetera. My decision and my idea from the beginning was to build a boat that had quite a wide speed range. So you wouldn't be limited to only driving at slow speeds, and you wouldn't be limited to having to drive at faster speeds.
Right. So which a foiling boat would have to drive. Yes.
So what the design limitations we put in place was that it has to be a boat that is really, really efficient and that behaves well at slow speeds, displacement speeds. But it must also be able to drive faster speeds, go up into so to speak, like planing speeds, 15, 20, 25. And we actually put the limit at 35 knots. So we want a boat that behaves well from 0 to 35 knots without any big planing thresholds or anything like that. So that was the limitations we put in place. And then starting to build a boat for this.
And then came the easy part.
Yeah, then came the easy part, exactly. Then you just execute. But what we did then, when we had this, I knew exactly what we wanted to do and what we wanted to reach. Then I tried to find some benchmarks. Like, what boat on the market today is as close as possible to this? And this was one of the really most interesting things during the whole journey so far. When you realize, there's no boat that does this. There are boats that can go slow, and there are boats that can go fast, but using a lot of energy. But finding the boats that can do both and being energy efficient in these speed intervals, you couldn't really find any. So then I started thinking, how do we do this then? And I started going back looking to commercial boats, started looking at fishing boats, because I like them. But then also realizing even the best fishing boats aren't energy efficient enough. So then started going back even further and looking where could we find a reference or something to benchmark against so we actually know if we're performing well or not. Then we went even further back in history. Then during the early 1900s in Finland, we had a prohibition time when you weren't allowed to sell alcohol. And what happens when you're not allowed to sell alcohol? Of course, people start smuggling alcohol, selling it on the black market, etc. So then we started looking at these old smuggler boats. Because when you think about it, their starting point was kind of similar to us. They needed to be fast because they had to outrun the police and Coast Guard, etc. But at that point of time, they didn't have very large motors. So they had small motors powering their boats. And to make the boats fast, they had to build very, very efficient hulls. And some of the most energy efficient hulls I've seen and I've found are these old smuggler boats that are 110, 120 years old. But this is actually where we started. These liquor smuggling boats were absolutely amazing. The hydrodynamics of them are superb. And this is where we started. So that was our benchmark. And then we got a benchmark to work against and started working from that. And when you had this, so you knew that this has been done. We know this works. This is the energy coefficient they have. Then, of course, starting redesigning the hulls, putting new materials, modern materials in place, simulations, and everything needed. And then we were able to get our hulls that are performing even better. And they have this speed range that we want. So they are very, very stable and easy to maneuver and energy efficient at 5 knots. And at the same time, you can drive at 15 knots or 25 knots or 30 plus. And how this was done, this is just simple optimization. We know that, we know the energy available and we know the performance we need to reach. And then it's just getting the hull energy efficient enough to reach those numbers.
Did you test it in models digitally or in a drag tank or whatever that's called?
Combination of all. Starting with simulations, digital simulations, building prototypes, testing them, modifying them, new digital simulations, and so forth. And we also involved a very experienced designer to help us out with this. So a naval architect that really helped us in the end to get the best optimization out of these models.
One of his ancestors was one of these alcohol smugglers, so he knew about the secrets.
Yeah, exactly. No, the alcohol smugglers, well, actually, I found them by myself.
Smuggling alcohol.
Yeah. No, but this is one of those things in the industry as general. I mean, you can usually find a lot of answers in history.
Yes.
This is also the case with electric propulsion.
Yeah.
I mean, it hurts my soul when people talk about electric motors being something new and electric propulsion being something new. And we have to wait and see if this new technology actually works. We've had this for centuries already.
I think the first powered boat was an electric boat. I have written another short article about that because it was built by the guy that basically invented the first running electric engine. That was about 200 or something years ago. We put a link in the show notes. And the only downside was the batteries were really, really, really expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was batteries. You couldn't recharge them. But the rides were very well received. People liked it, and it was something very special. But it was super expensive, and not really electricity wasn't really really available at that time.
Exactly.
Other than coal, for example. I'm with you. It's a strange thing that we sort of diverted from electric motors, also in cars, right? Although you're using them everywhere else. Even in gas engine cars, there's hundreds of small electric motors that do everything else to add comfort to the car.
Exactly.
And the most important comfort is no noise.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, all the efforts that's been put into making cars and boats more silent or to soundproof the combustion engine. Instead of just taking it out of the equation and having a silent drivetrain.
Yeah. That was a great observation, I think. Also, the thing with charging, I mean, in a normal standard Mediterranean marina type style, there is always some sort of electricity at every berth. But it's just not fast charging. It's slow tickling charge. But it could be enough, right, if you don't use the boat every day. But for a powerful boat, it's just not enough, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you started with a great hull. You improved on the concept. You made it better. Coming back to that engineering way of doing things and working with numbers and prototyping and stuff like that. And then you get to the first commercial product. What was that? What was your first commercial product? What was it named?
The first commercial product, I could probably say this now because we just stopped producing it. Our first commercial product was a product that was never supposed to happen. It was our boat named Greta, which was just it was a prototype. It was an engineering platform where we did all our testing. We built our prototype. We tested the drivetrain. We verified our calculations and everything like that. And this was, we just started getting some visibility. I mean, this was really early on. This was when I built the first hulls and the first boats by myself, by hand, in the garage, just as an engineering project to verify for myself that this is actually possible.
When was that approximately?
That was just when COVID hit. So 2019, 2020, that point of time.
So you found a project to keep yourself healthy.
Yeah, exactly. So this was built the very, very first prototype like this that was modified a million times. But when I started going out and driving with this and showing it to people, and we started getting some visibility and some traction, and then I started getting requests like, hey, I would like that type of boat. And then I just made the decision like, okay, fine, this is our first product. Let's make molds for it. Let's get a CE certification and let's start selling it. And that little boat was delivered then to several countries in Europe. And it was also our first delivery to Africa. So that was a big day in our early days when we shipped our first container full of boats to Ghana. Still remember that day. Cool. It's a great day. But so yeah, Greta was our first product, and that was a fantastic little boat.
I mean,
still is. Still is.
And you probably named it after Greta Thunberg. Not sure how to pronounce the name.
Who,
right?
Who? Sure. I don't, what were you talking about?
Okay.
Yeah. Greta is a beautiful name.
Yes. Your daughters are called Greta. No, I mean, it's very fitting. It's good to have voyages in your life, right? That bring you to something, to a special point. Okay, so Greta was the first commercial product. Then there came others. So yes. Where are you now? What is the state of your product range right now?
The state of our product range. Well, after Greta had been in production and we had delivered that to a couple of countries, then the next in line was Amber, and this is where really all the optimization of the hull came into play, because Greta was a small, slow boat. I mean, the really simple proof of concept of the technology. Amber was the first like real product where we wanted to push the boundaries and really show what is possible with solar electric boating. So on this one, we have maximized the solar surface. We have the whole deck is covered with solar panels that are protected so you can walk on them. So instead of having a glass fiber deck or teak deck or whatever, you have a solar deck that at the same time works as an anti-skid to walk on. This boat now does some 30 plus knots. We have, as we're based in Finland on the West Coast, we have gone across to Sweden and back with this boat without charging. We have done 200 plus nautical miles without charging. And this was really like, even though we delivered Greta's internationally and all the way to Africa, Amber was the starting point of our real international growth and international recognition, because she was absolutely unique on the market when we launched it. And I would say still is.
Yep.
And from this then, because this boat was really optimized for performance. So we had a cuddy cabin that was covered with solar and to maximize the solar surface. But we quickly realized that when you go a bit further south, when you go to the Mediterranean or to just warmer areas, I mean, no one wants a small cuddy cabin. They want the open bow. They want the sun decks. They want to enjoy the nice weather that we don't know. We don't know what that means up here in Finland. But apparently the sun can be warm. I haven't experienced that yet. So then we realized that they like a different type of design, and there's a bigger market for a different type of design. And now we're just talking leisure boating. So then we developed a new model called Amy. Officially, we launched her last year. This year, we have been touring Europe with this boat a lot. Really popular in the Mediterranean. And the main difference with this one is that it has a completely open bow. So an open bow with a seating area that you can turn into a sun deck. More of a social boat than a transport boat. I would say when you go on an Amber, you're going somewhere. When you sit on an Amy, you're just going out to enjoy life, enjoy the weather, enjoy your friends. So that is the main difference. But then actually now, what day is it? Today is 26th today. In about 2 weeks, we're actually presenting a new model. We haven't talked about this at all yet, but I can give you a teaser here right now. We have a new model coming.
We will link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely. You should. No, so that is coming. And then, of course, we have several projects on the drawing board, but nothing finalized yet. Nothing that I can really present.
Okay. So you improved the boats with every new version, with every new category, with every new, say, technically, but also you sort of tailored it to the needs of the users. One is using it as a sort of a taxi boat is different than using it as a pure leisure boat, for example.
Yes.
And so we incorporated different things into that also. Okay, and you learned, you took the chance to learn from every product range to the next one, which I like a lot. Thank you.
No, you're absolutely right on this one, because I mean, from the beginning, I knew that no matter how good of a market study I make, no matter how much time we spend interviewing potential customers, etc., the design that we come up with will not be a perfect fit for the market. I knew this from day one. And from that, I made the decision to make the boat very modular so that it would be easy to change them according to customer requests and customer feedback. And when we had the first Amber ready, I mean, the first Amber we ever built, that went all over the world. I mean, that was on the road for a year or so, going from show to show to show, not so much with the purpose of selling, but more with the purpose of getting feedback. So we wanted to hear what people had to say. We wanted to hear their honest opinions, their recommendations, ideas, improvement suggestions, etc. And of course, we implement that all the time. We can't do everything at once, but like you said, every time when there's a new release, there's a bunch of improvements. Of course, we always present something big that is like the big new thing, that is the big improvement. But on top of that, there's probably 100 improvements that aren't as visible. But I mean, for every release, there's a new iteration and the technology evolves and there's improvements coming all the time.
All these iterations, all these new products, all these take a lot of, let's say, people, take a network of people, take a network of experts, companies. Did it help that you are, for your development, that you are in such a large cluster of boat building in your region?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our closest neighbors are a world-renowned super yacht manufacturer that are, I mean, they're known for their innovation, their material technology that is like top of the line. And to have companies like that next door, so you can just go and have a coffee with them and discuss the problems you're having. And as, yes, of course, you're both building boats, but for completely different markets. So there's like no competition in between, but you can openly share and ask and get support. And absolutely, it's been extremely valuable.
Okay. I think that's, it's always, if you have such a cluster around you of experts, you have to use it, right? It's to a full extent. You have to sort of ask others and help others whenever they ask you. Yeah. So do you provide, will you provide the tender, the solar tenders for these boats you just mentioned?
We don't have an agreement yet, but you can please suggest it to them.
No problem. I know the boss. Working on a range of boats, right? With three mm-hmm. different models, four different models coming up soon, mm-hmm. the fourth mm-hmm. coming up soon. You had probably a very steep learning curve. There was lots of things you had to solve, lots of observations, lots of improvements, prototypes, lots of challenges, right? And so I was wondering, what do you consider like the biggest challenge that you and your team had to solve? Do you have something in mind that was maybe even surprising for you as a challenge that you had to solve beside the bureaucracy?
Oh, you took my answer. To be honest, from an engineering point of view, actually developing products has been, I don't know if I dare to say this because this will not be published, but it's been surprisingly easy. Because if you just design according to facts, according to scientific facts, you know the results you will reach. It doesn't come as a surprise when the result in reality is the same as your calculations. So as long as you design according to facts and not just fiction or what you're hoping to be true, the design process has been surprisingly easy. What always comes as a little bit of surprise to me, as you can hear, I'm quite deep. I'm an engineer in the background. I still have an engineering mind. Should turn more into, something else. But I'm very, very deep in the engineering mindset. And the one thing I find challenging all the time is when it sometimes can be difficult for the public to understand scientific facts. And when we're seeing that opinions carry the same value as facts, that has been extremely challenging for me on a personal level and also for my team, I know. Because when you're standing there so proud of what you have achieved and you can present the data and no one really cares. That's the challenging part.
Not to punch that person into the face.
Yeah, exactly. And then they convert that into something that they understand and appreciate. That is the challenging part for an engineer.
But you still like to talk to people. That's a good first step for an engineer.
Oh, that's a good first step, yeah. Absolutely.
What would you rather do rather than boat building?
Driving boats.
Driving boats, right. Stupid question, excuse me.
And like I said, I've always been building boats as a hobby. I've been an entrepreneur before I started Elven. I've been an entrepreneur for about 10 years and I've been in different businesses, always in manufacturing industries, worked from quality management, project management, sales management, all over the world. The one thing I want and the one thing I can't live without is change and development. I have to be in an environment that is always evolving, always improving, developing. And that's why I think I enjoy this so much, because the industry as a whole is evolving. And it's changing every day. We who are in the industry see the target that we're aiming for and we're working for it every day. Many times it's an uphill battle, but we still see the goal and we're getting closer every day. And that is what I like about this. And that is what I would need if I wasn't building boats as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Emil, for being part of this conversation today.
Thank you so much, Klaus.
Thank you for listening to the 2.5 Conversations Connecting Innovators. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. A transcript of this episode and additional information is also available. The link is in the show notes. My name is Klaus. I'm an innovation coach in Baden-Württemberg in the southwest of Germany. This is the 2.5.